Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Tuesday, October 14th at 6:13, and it's 65 degrees in the city. And if you go to the suburbs, even nicer. In Belchase, it's 63, 59 in Houma, 60 in Covington, 60 in Slidell. It is going to warm up, though, to like 84 for today. And then looking ahead to the rest of the week, we're talking about some highs, mid-80s, maybe go to a little bit higher than that, the upper 80s by the end of the week. But then another cool front. Rain, first of all, I should say, on Saturday and Sunday, a chance for showers. Then a cool front comes in, keeps the eyes around 80, 82, and 81 for early next week. So we're getting in a second half of October, heading toward Halloween. You would hope we're done with the 90s and hurricane season and it gets a little bit cooler, but you never know. Aaron Dusso joins us now, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis. You would hope we'll be done or would be done with the government shutdown, but not. I don't think so. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what to ask you, but I don't know. Aaron, what's the latest on the government shutdown?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is I think we talked a couple of weeks ago, and not much has happened. I mean, there hasn't been any significant, important talks between Republicans and Democrats at all. So we sit here waiting, basically.
Have you seen any good movies lately?
Right. The most interesting thing I actually saw over the weekend was a poll that was released by Reuters Ipsos asking, they didn't ask the question, who do you blame, Republicans or Democrats? They did a more interesting thing, and they asked, how much blame do you give to Republicans? And then a second question, how much blame do you give to Democrats? And here's, I think, the reason why we're not seeing much movement, because, well, 67% of people say that at least a fair amount of the blame goes to Republicans, and 63% at least a fair amount of blame goes to Democrats. So there's no real signal there about who's to blame, and when there's no one to blame, both parties just sit there.
See, I don't see how this resolves itself, because the Democrats, with this December 31st deadline on the supplement to health care, premiums expiring. I don't see how, as the time goes on, they can cave. If the Republicans decided to draw the line in the sand and say, well, no, we're not going to do that, then I don't see how they cave. I don't see how this ends, do you? Or is there some kind of government provision or something that kicks in that will force them to come to some type of agreement?
No, this is just about political battle and who feels like they're losing politically. And that's why I kind of always am pointing to the, you know, a public opinion, because that's the thing that, you know, any elected official is concerned about. If public opinion starts to shift against me, I am in big trouble, and therefore I'm much more willing to compromise. And that's what's just not moving at all. I don't think there's so much going on in the world right now. I don't think a lot of people are still even focusing on the government shutdown.
So what would cause some movement? What would get the people's attention when it comes to government shutdown?
Well, you know, if we're thinking about what's less talked about and ways that we might actually see this end, is actually changing Senate rules. And this has not been talked about a lot. A couple of Republicans have mentioned this. And what I mean by that is we've watched over the last dozen years or so, the Senate has changed rules regarding nominations. Right, mm-hmm. We've seen the Supreme Court. You don't need to get through a cloture vote anymore. You just can vote with a majority. Well, the reality is that the Senate hasn't actually changed any of its rules. They're just changed how they interpret the rules. So they're interpreting the cloture vote when it comes to a nomination of the Supreme Court as only meaning a majority, while the rule still says you need 3/5. Mm-hmm. So the argument is, among some Republicans, is that, well, why don't we just change that when it comes to funding the government so that we can just reinterpret the rule to require only a simple majority in order to get to a vote in the Senate and therefore reopen the government.
So what does the law or the Constitution or whatever say about that? Nothing? The Senate can do what they want?
Yeah, the Senate can make up its own rules, and so technically to change the rules in the Senate, you need 2/3 of votes, so 66%. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to how they do this, it's called going nuclear. You've heard that a million times, right? And so, well, how they do it is that John Thune would get up and he'd make a point of order saying that only a simple majority is required, and then the presiding officer would probably say no, it's 60% is still required, and then Thune would appeal that. And this is the key. The appeal goes to the Senate floor automatically, can't be filibustered, and you only need a majority in order to sustain an appeal. And that's why you can change the rules of interpretation of the rules in the Senate with simple majority. And that's the theory that would be where Republicans could just use the majority and change the rules regarding funding of government and therefore get rid of the notion that you can filibuster this.
Why haven't they done that already?
Well, there's political consequences, and we can see the political consequences that have happened going back to 2013 when Democrats were the first ones to change it, with Harry Reid as the leader. Then the next one's going to change it, the next one's going to change it, and now we're in a situation where basically no nomination at all can be filibustered, and so you lose your power. And so if you're a senator, you're thinking, well, I might not always be in the majority. I don't want to give up this power. And so that's the one thing that's kind of the sticking point. Is there enough Republicans that are willing to say, I'm willing to give up this power to solve this problem right now?
But how would the Republicans be giving up the power?
Well, so what they're doing is once you set this precedent that you no longer can filibuster, any type of funding bill, that means no one can filibuster it in the future either. So you no longer have the ability to use that leverage.
Oh, specifically as it relates to funding bill.
Right, yeah. Typically they'll limit it to saying...
Because they've gone nuclear before, but that was on different issues, right?
Right, right. Yeah, they're picking and choosing specific issues like nominations. They're gone nuclear on that. So now they're saying, well, why don't we just do that on a funding bill? So then we'll limit filibusters on funding bills. And so, but 10 years from now, you can't filibuster anymore then either. So who's going to be in the majority 10 years from now? We don't know.
So when it comes to Supreme Court justices, et cetera, they gave up that right. I mean, in a way, they've surrendered the power already, hoping that they would be in the majority, right? But I guess the difference is... A Supreme Court nomination is a lifetime or confirmation is a lifetime thing, so they can forever change the country, and they're willing to make the deal then where maybe not make the deal now when it comes to things that would change the country on a yearly basis. Am I getting close here, Aaron, or no?
Well, right. I mean, so Amy Coney Barrett is sitting on the Supreme Court right now. There's no way she would have gotten through a nomination, certainly in that couple of months right before the election, if you could still filibuster. But because they basically changed the rules back in 2013, that eliminated the ability of Democrats to filibuster that, stop that nomination being rammed through right before the election.
So they changed the rules pursuant to whatever they can change the rules pursuant to whatever the topic is at hand or the subject is at hand?
Well, in theory, they could change the rules and just get rid of the filibuster for everything. Right. But they've been a little bit more curtailed in their ambitions because they don't think they'll get the votes necessary. So they're picking and choosing. So right now, if you're talking 2 weeks from now, Republicans are like, we're done with this. We want to move on. I could see a strong movement within the party to say, let's just change the rules regarding funding of government, and therefore we can move on and reopen the government and move on with our lives.
But it would be, as a politician would say, the isha, not the issue, but the issue, because it would then be, for example, if we were going to have a national dog and we were going to name the cockapoo the national dog, well, then we would say, you know what, let's eliminate the filibuster as it relates to naming a national dog, and then in the future that would forever be changed.
Right, yeah. I mean, then we could change the national dog to the dachshund, 10 years from now.
And they couldn't
no one could stop it.
Could the majority party change it again next year, though, if they can make up whatever rules they want? So how are they surrendering power forever, I guess is what I'm asking.
So in theory, yeah, you could, in 2 years, change the rule back, but then that's limiting yourself, right? So this is a challenge. Well, if I'm the majority party, why would I set the new rule that I can't do things? Because that's what you're asking the majority party. They just never have that incentive. And so the precedent right now is set that you can change rules this way. And if they use it to expand to funding the government, okay, well, now we can just use a simple majority to get past that too. And you're asking a majority 3 years from now to say, oh, we don't want that power anymore. We're happy to have another government shutdown. That there's just not going to be the political will to do that.
All right, let's take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back, pick it up here when we come back. 6:21 and a half, talking about the government shutdown and what's changed, and other than maybe going to the nuclear option, not a whole lot. I know the president's Middle Eastern trip has sucked a lot of the oxygen out of this debate, and people aren't paying attention to it. I'll ask Aaron when we come back how Mr. and Mrs. America are feeling about it at home in the heartland about the government shutdown. Do they care or not? Aaron Dusso, our guest, associate professor of political science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, 6:22. Traffic now, WWL. Couple of minutes left with Aaron Dusso, 6:27 and a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Aaron's our friend, associate professor of political science at Indiana University, Indianapolis. Yeah, Indiana University. That's what I said, Indianapolis. Somebody texted in, Aaron, and said, is it true that the Democrats shut the government down because they wanted to give health care to illegal immigrants?
The phrasing there obviously is suggest obviously that the blame would go on Democrats.
Pejorative, no, perhaps, yes. So insinuating.
Right, yes. But it's not legal to give health care to undocumented individuals. Now,
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our rules that if someone, a human being, shows up in your emergency room, we don't just let them die right there on the floor. So people will be helped even if they didn't have documentation. And then someone's going to have to pay for it. But the idea that we don't let people die on emergency room floors is probably supported by a majority.
Yeah. And the states can decide that, but the federal government does not, correct?
Well, I mean,
when it comes to health care for illegal immigrants, that states can provide that if they want, but that's not a federal program other than the emergency room law that says you can't let people die on the floor of an emergency room no matter who they are, correct?
Right. I mean, so states have lots of say in exactly where funding could be. State funding can go. And so if a state decided they wanted to fund all people within the state, they certainly could do that. But that, it's not a federal thing that the Democrats are fighting for.
So how do you see this playing out, Aaron? You've been around a long time. How do you see it ending? I mean, what was the longest one, 35 days in history?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the way I see it playing out is that something happens, say air traffic controllers decide that's it. We're done not working and not getting paid. And we're going to just leave. And so you have a crisis like that, that causes mass disruption throughout the country, that people that, weren't paying attention are now paying attention. And that's going to cause both sides are going to get to the table and say, all right, we got to finish this.
I would encourage all IRS agents to walk off the job today and to remain off the job forever.
Yeah.
because I had to.
Well, we still need money in order to fund things the military.
Yeah, because I filed an extension and I had to pay, I had to send them a small Hyundai a couple of weeks ago. I thank you, Aaron. I appreciate your time as always. We'll take a break, come back, talk about supply chain and tariffs. Right now, though, it's 6:30. That would be time for WWL First News. And for that, well, let's go to Ian Ozan. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Beautiful Tuesday morning. Temperatures in the 60s throughout the area, going up to the 80s. No chance for rain till the weekend, unfortunately. Got a lot of festivals and so forth planned, but hopefully not a washout. Then it turns even cooler. And keep in mind, we're knocking on the middle of October, the middle of October here. So hopefully it'll turn cool for Halloween and summer will be behind us and hurricane season will be behind us. But who knows? What'll happen with tariffs? Patrick Penfield joins us now, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University, to help walk us through it. How you doing, professor?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Tell me what's going on with tariffs, because with Middle East and government shutdown and all that, I kind of lost focus on it.
Yeah, the big issue these days, Tommy, is the 100% tariff that possibly could be enacted on China on November 1st, from the Trump administration.
Possibly could be enacted on November 1st. There's a lot of wiggle room in that, huh?
Yeah, and I think that's probably, the key thing. It's negotiations, right? So the problem is that China just enacted some restrictions on rare earth. And so rare earth's used on a lot of electronics. And they mine about 70% of the rare earth and process about 90%. So they really kind of have a stranglehold from a supply chain standpoint on rare earth. And so this is the reason why the Trump administration has decided to enact a potentially 100% tariff on China November 1st.
China did restrictions on rare earth. Why?
Because they can. It's used as a negotiation ploy, right? And that's.
But what does that mean, Professor? Maybe I should have asked it that way. They put limits on how much the United States can get or how much they're going to export?
Yes. Both to that.
Okay.
They're really, and that's the dilemma, they control 90% of the rare earth that's processed, right? So they're the only ones that can really do it, and you need it, and it's ubiquitous. It's used in everything from an electronic standpoint, electronics, cars, defense technology, it's used almost in everything, and right? So a lot of these companies in the United States are getting very upset because they can't get as much as they need.
These would be minerals we're talking about?
Yeah, it's earth that's mined in China, and then they've done a lot of through probably the past 30 years on really building up that industry. Mm-hmm. So they mine it in China, and then they refine it and process it. And in fact, they are so good at processing that other countries send their rare earth to be processed in China.
So how are we defining rare earth? Tell me what that is.
Yeah, it's minerals. Okay. Minerals that you would need in electronics.
So
it's just the basics.
Do we have them here, and is it just a filthy business to mine them and then process them, and that's why China's willing to do it, or do we not have them here?
We don't have them here. We have some deposits of rare earth, but we haven't really been mining it because, like you just did, it's dirty, it's kind of a tough industry, and we kind of lost that core competency, and so that's actually gone over to China, and they really have invested a lot in that, and unfortunately, that's really kind of the base product that you need for most electronics.
So, long game, you got a couple of different considerations here. You got national security, plus you also have, is this something you really want done? Because ultimately you can say you bring it back to the United States, but then it's going to come to, but don't do it here, right? So is there any possible way that the United States is not dependent on China for these rare earth minerals?
At this time, no. Mm-hmm. But could they in the future? Absolutely. But it's going to take time, investment, and money. And there are places around the world that are doing some of it, but not to the extent level that China is. And so it's going to take time, at least 10 to 15 years to actually find other domestic sources or other international sources that can produce what China's producing at this time.
So you know what's involved here, and you know how people are not in my backyard, the old NIMBY thing. I'm just wondering, would people in the United States anywhere welcome this kind of activity in their community where it's like, okay, yeah, let's start mining for rare earth. It's going to destroy the environment and maybe the area, but let's do it. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think the thing is, it's the deposits of rare earth, right? So they're not everywhere.
Right.
And they're in certain,
Well, that's true, too. You can't pick and choose. It's not like building a refinery. You can't pick and choose where you're going to do this. It depends on where they are and where you got to go get them. Thank you for correcting that.
Yeah, exactly, Tommy. So that's the dilemma. There's just not many deposits here in the U.S., and I think the deposits that we do have are in the West. So I don't think it would be that difficult. It's just a question of we wouldn't really have enough supply in order to take care of our industry. We still need more.
So you're going to be dependent on, is there anybody besides China that has these materials?
Yeah, there's some Estonia, I think, in Europe. I want to say there's some folks, maybe Germany, Japan. There's not really a lot of players in this field yet.
So you got a poker game going on. You got President Trump and the United States on one side with tariffs in their hand. China on the other side is holding in their hand the materials, the rare earth minerals that the United States needs. We'll see what happens from here when we come back with Patrick Penfield, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University, 650, 10 till 7. Oh, call it 9 till 7. Traffic now, WWL. Hi, Tommy Tucker, 655 and a half, talking to our friend Patrick Penfield, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. So the president is threatening China with tariffs. Tariffs has rare minerals that they're cutting back on the availability of and supplying to the United States. So who's got the stronger hand, professor, going into this?
Well, I think China does, unfortunately, Tommy. So I think they do, and I think probably what you'll see is some type of negotiation that happens before November 1st. So I assume that, you know, both parties will probably try to come to some type of, you know, middle or compromise. However, that being said, again, this does put us in a precarious situation. You know, having our reliance on China for these rare earths, it's really going to be difficult in the future.
And what do we use these rare earths for? Rely on them for what?
Electronics. So, you know, most of your electronics use rare earth as, you know, the base product, the minerals, you know, that actually make the capacitors and the transistors and, you know, everything that basically goes into your electronics.
So I don't see how the United States in the short term can win this other than the president saying, okay, we're going to tariff the heck out of your cabinet. What is he threatening to tariff now? Kitchen cabinets? What else was it?
Yeah, it's 100% on everything coming from China. So that's his leverage. That's really what he has. And the unfortunate thing is China has been kind of pushing away from the United States as an export market and trying to, you know, develop relationships with other countries. That being said, they are still very dependent on us, you know, as far as us buying their products.
So how do you see this ending up?
I see basically the United States rolling back that 100%. I think the 30% tariff will stay. I think the Chinese will open up some of their rare minerals. But I think you're going to see this as kind of their pressure point. Whenever they feel that the United States is, you know, doing something that they don't like, you know, they're going to go back to that hand again and say, hey, look, we're going to do this with rare earths. You're not going to get this. And I think that's what you're probably going to see in the next couple of years.
All right. So from a national security standpoint, Xi Jinping gets, you know, wakes up on a bad day and has a toothache and says, you know what, that's it. No more rare minerals. Forget it. Screw the United States. What happens then?
We're going to be in a world of hurt. So the United States companies will have to scramble, try to find where they can get this material from. And then, you know, again, you'll see less electronics. You'll see less manufacturing of those types of products. And it definitely gives the Chinese an advantage over us.
So when it comes to the consumer, are they likely to feel any of this or not?
If China decides to go through with, you know, again, restricting rare earth, eventually, what will happen is you'll see less electronics. You'll see the technology not as good as what you would see in Asia. And that's really, you know, a big deal also because, you know, we won't be seeing the increases in technology that you might see in China.
The United States, from a defense standpoint, has to have a backup plan, I would think, right?
Yeah, you can get some rare earths from other places. It's just not to the quantity and quality that you want from China.
What about tariffs and Christmas shopping?
Tariffs, Christmas. So far I think we're okay. So I don't think you're gonna still see some prices increased, but we should be okay for the holiday season.
So, despite all of the talk of tariffs, have consumers really seen a big price increase because of that, or is it just inflation?
No, they have. There have been some studies done, Tommy, and what we're seeing is anything that's imported, 4% increase. Anything that's made domestic, it's been about a 2% increase. So, you know, net-net, you know, probably right around 3%.
Gotcha. Thank you, Professor. Appreciate it. Patrick Penfield, Professor of Supply Chain practice at Syracuse University. We'll come back and talk about La Nina. Somebody texted in and said, no matter what President Trump can do, we're going to criticize him. That's not true at all. I was complimenting the president yesterday for his Middle East peace thing. And if he can work out a peace agreement between Russia and Ukraine, it's going to get pretty good for him.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 1H2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.